Okay, so y'all ready to get started? So we're about halfway through the chapter. I'll finish this chapter today. So what is this elasticity? What is if I own a business and I raise price and my total revenue goes down, elastic or inelastic? Elastic. Now, how do I know that? Well, let's see. Now, if I raise price, two things are going to happen, right? On the one hand, I'm going to make more money because of the higher price, correct? But I'm going to lose money because demand curves have a downward slope, correct? So I'm going to sell fewer units. So I'm going to make money in one hand, but lose money on the other hand. So which is greater? Well, I think it's over right there. So, and you can put on that front table when you're done. That's a good place for it. Thanks. So, so what happens? Well, if I raise price now, if my product faces an elastic demand curve, what does that mean? That elastic means easily stretched, right? If I had a rubber band up here and I was saying, okay, now this rubber band is very elastic, what would that mean? Well, that would mean that this rubber band could be easily stretched, correct? So if I raise price and consumers are very sensitive to that increase in price so that the quantity demanded goes down a lot, then we say that that's elastic, correct? But the real proof of whether it's elastic or inelastic is if I raise price and the amount of money I gain from the higher price is less than the amount of money I lose due to the decrease in quantity, then that's a proof of an inelastic demand curve. Now, that's important information to me as a business owner because, see, what is microeconomics all about? I mean, what's the whole point to this semester? Huh? In a general sense, but more specifically, I mean, why are we studying elasticity? And by the way, this is what we're really looking at here is called price elasticity of demand, because what we're doing here is we're changing price and then we're seeing what the result is, because there's different elasticities. There's a supply elasticity, and then there's other types of elasticities that we're going to mention in the latter part of the chapter. But right now we're talking about price elasticity of demand. Now, why are we... What's price elasticity demand got to do with microeconomics? Huh? Anybody? Yes, that's the key. Decision making. The key to microeconomics is the decision making process of economics. That's why we study elasticity. If you owned a business and you raised your price, would it be a good idea for you to know whether your total revenue will go up or down? I mean, would that be valuable information in order for you to make the right decision of whether to raise your price or not? See what I'm getting at? See, the decision making. See, everything that we do in microeconomics involves tools that we use to make better decisions. All right. So here we are. We own a business, and if our product faces an elastic demand curve, that means that if we raise price, our total revenue will go down. That's the proof of elasticity. Now, if I raise price and my total revenue goes up, see, why wouldn't my total revenue go up if I raise price? Again, I gain in one hand, lose in the other hand, right? I gain from the higher price, but I lose because I'm selling fewer units. Now, if my product faces an inelastic demand curve, what's happening? Huh? Now, what is inelastic mean? I mean, if I had a rubber band up here and I'm trying to show you, oh man, this rubber band is so inelastic. I mean, what would I be trying to show you?
No, it doesn't stretch.
It doesn't stretch, not at least not very easily. Now, it stretches because demand curves have a downward slope, right? When we change price, there is going to be a change in the quantity demanded. But if the quantity that we sell is, I mean, in other words, if consumers are not very sensitive to that change in price, so that the amount of money that we gain from the higher price is more than the amount of money we lose due to the decline in quantity, then that would be a proof of an inelastic demand curve. Now, we know that elastic demand curves are more horizontal and inelastic demand curves are more vertical, but the real exact proof of, you know, is this, I mean, specifically, exactly, is this inelastic or elastic? The proof is in what happens to total revenue when we raise price. We raise price, total revenue goes up, inelastic. We raise price, total revenue goes down, elastic. See, that's a definite proof. Now, is it possible that we could raise price and the amount of money we gain exactly equals the amount of money we lose? Well, that's possible, right? Now, that may not happen very often, but it's possible. And if by chance that happens, then we call it unitary elastic. So it really makes no difference if we raise price or not, our total revenue is going to be the same. But at least we know that. See, that gives us some important information. Now I'm going to backtrack just a little bit because we do have time. And I'm going to go back to slide 39. And slide 39 has this picture of this downward sloping demand curve. And it's got 2 points on the demand curve. And what's this? Why am I showing you this demand curve with point A and point B? What this is illustrating is that if we calculate elasticity as we go from point A to point B, we'll get a certain value. Now, value, by the way, if we work the formula and get a value of, let's say, 1.6, elastic or inelastic? Elastic, because it's greater than 1. If we work the formula and get a value of, let's say, 0.4, elastic or inelastic? Inelastic, because it's less than 1. If we work the formula and we get and we happen to get a value of 1, then it's called unitary elastic. But like I say, that won't happen very often. But what this slide is showing us is that if we work the formula as it just exists mathematically, as we go from point A to B, we'll get one value. If we go from point B to A, we'll get a different value. Right? Remember, we talked about if we go from 3 to 5, how do we calculate the percent increase? Huh? How do you calculate percent increase as you go from 3 to 5? Exactly right. 5 minus 3 divided by... No, we go from 3 to 5, it'd be 5 minus 3 divided by 3. To get the percent increase between two numbers, you take the difference between the two numbers and then you divide by the original number. So if we go from 3 to 5, the difference is what? 2. What's the original number? 3. So it's 2 divided by 3, or 67%. So if we go from 3 to 5, that's a 67% increase. But if we go from 5 to 3, what's a percent decrease? At least how would you calculate the percent decrease if we went from 5 to 3? Well, same thing, right? We take the difference and divide by the original number. But this time, the original number is what? It's 5 instead of 3. So 2 divided by 5 is 40%. So if we go from 5 to 3, that's a 40% decrease. If we go from 3 to 5, 67% increase. 5 to 3, that's a 40% decrease. And that's what we have here. You see, with this, if we're calculating elasticity, the price elasticity of demand on between points A and B on this demand curve, well, if we go from point A to B, we'll get one value. If we go from B to A, we'll get a different value. And that is a problem. Economists don't like that. They don't. They don't like to look at the demand curve. And here we've got the same area on this curve. And yet, depending upon which way we go, there's the attendance sheet right there. Depending on which way we go, we get different values. So, how did we solve this problem? How do we solve this problem? Anybody? This is review, right? Didn't we talk about this last time? Now you guys, hopefully you're not going to eat in here. You're not allowed to drink anything or eat other than maybe water. Yeah. So how do we solve this problem? Yeah, the average. Instead of dividing by the original number, you know, if we take the percent increase, mathematically we take the difference and then we divide by the original number. But here we're going to modify that mathematical formula. And we're going to say, well, when we take the difference, I mean, to calculate percent increase, when we take the difference, instead of dividing by the original number, we're going to divide by the average of the two numbers. So, like, if we go from 3 to 5, mathematically, we would say 2 divided by 3, because 3 is the original number. But using this arc elasticity of formula, instead of saying 2 divided by 3, it would be 2 divided by what? Huh? No. All right, we're going from 3 to 5. We're going to use the arc elasticity demand formula. We take the difference between the two numbers. It's 2. But instead of dividing by the original number, we divide by what? No. What's the first number? 3. What's the second number? 5. What's 5 plus 3? 8. What's 8 divided by 2? 4. So it would be 2 divided by 4. Yeah, it would be one half. But the point is that we're not using the mathematical formula. We're using this modified formula. Now, if we go from 5 to 3, now at mathematically, we go from 5 to 3, what's a percent decrease? The difference between the two numbers divided by the original number, correct? But instead of doing that, we take the difference between the two numbers divided by what? What? Well, it's the same thing, right? We take we add up the two numbers. 5, 3 is 8, right? What's 8 divided by 2? 4. So we divide by 4 again. Well, voila, we get the same whether we're going up or down, we get the same answer. See, that solves this problem. That's all, you know, if we go from A to B, we get a certain elasticity of demand. We get a number. We get a value. And if we go from B to A, well, lo and behold, we get the same answer. And economists say, hey, we like that. I mean, here's one section of a demand curve, and whether you're going up or down that demand curve, we can say that the price elasticity of demand is whatever it is. You know, it's got a certain value, whether you're going from A to B or B to A. So that's why, like on the test, when you're going to have to calculate these values. Well, we always use this modified formula in economics. We don't use a mathematical formula for a percent increase. We use this modified formula. All right. And the answer to this problem is to use the arc elasticity of demand formula, which is a change in the quantity demanded. Instead of dividing by the original quantity, we take the sum of the two quantities, divide by two, or an average. Then we divide that whole thing by a change in price. And again, we take the sum of the two prices and divide by two, and so we get an average of the two prices. So we get a change in the quantity demanded divided by a change in the percent change in the price. We get the formula here is a percent change in quantity demanded divided by the percent change in price. This gives us a value for price elasticity of demand. Now this here is the formula, and I mean if you look at this, elasticity and D stands for demand. It looks kind of complicated, but if you just break it down, it's pretty simple. You know, this just says where the price elasticity of demand is the difference between the two quantities divided by the average of the two quantities, and then divide that whole thing by the difference of the two prices divided by the average of the two prices. So we get one fraction divided by another fraction. Now, way back in the fourth grade, you learned that when you divide fractions, how do you come up with the answer? The inverse. You flip. Not a preferred a professional way of saying it, but you take the inverse, or you flip. The second number, which is really the denominator, and then you multiply across. And so this here, you see. Shows us exactly that. You see, we flip the denominator, and then we multiply across numerator, and denominator to denominator, and then we get a fraction, and then we would convert that fraction to a decimal, and that's our answer. I mean, that's what price elasticity demand is. That might be 1.6, which would say this is very elastic, or it might be 0.4, which would say this is very, very inelastic. And here we have some practice. Now, again, this is a review, but I can tell that you all need this. So here, there's actually two problems here. What we're doing is we're calculating the price elasticity demand for bananas. And then we're going to calculate the price elasticity demand for oranges. And what this says is that if price goes down from $20 to $18 for bananas, then the quantity demanded will increase from 200 units to 240 units. Well, that's what we would expect, right? Price goes down, the quantity demanded goes up. But what we got to learn is how sensitive is that price change going to be to our quantity demanded, and therefore our revenue? Is our revenue going to go up, or is our revenue going to go down in this situation? So how do we know? How do we know if our revenue is going to go up or down? Well, we are exactly what is our price elasticity demand? Well, how do we do this? We take the difference between what? The two, well, quantities first. We take the difference between the two quantities, which is what? And that's how we get this 40, right? And then we divide that by, now how do we get 220? What do we do here? Exactly. You add the quantities together. 200 plus 240 is 440. 440 divided by 2 is... That's how we get this 220 here, right? Divided by... Well, what's the change in price? That's how we get this 2. Divided by... How do we get 19? Whoops. 20 plus 18 is what? 38 divided by 2 is 19. And that's how we get this 19. Then mathematically, I mean, here's a fraction divided by another fraction. So what do? Well, we invert. 2 over 19 becomes 19 over 2. And then we multiply across. And as a fraction, we get 760 or 440. And then you can convert that to a decimal and say, you know, this is the price elasticity demand. So, elastic or inelastic? Elastic. It's greater than 1. This says that if we raise price, what's going to happen to our total revenue? It's going to go up. Right? Let's see. No, I'm sorry. If it's greater than 1, if we raise price, our total revenue will go down, right? If it's elastic. Mm-hmm. See, that's why you always got to think about these things. I mean, I don't commit this to memory. Each time I got to think this through myself. So, with elasticity of greater than 1, that means that if we raise price, our total revenue will go down. Well, you know, how much will our total revenue go down? Well, knowing this value here will give us some idea of how much our total revenue will go down. I mean, that's really the whole point. I mean, not only do we want to know if we raise price, what's going to happen to total revenue? I mean, it'll go up or down. But we want to know, if we raise price, how much will our total revenue go up? Or how much will our total revenue go down? And that's why this value was so important. This value, you know, 1.2 or 1.6 or 2.4, I mean, all those are elastic, but each value will give us a good indication of how much our total revenue will go down if we change price. I mean, if we raise price. You see? Okay, well, let's work the other one here. Let's do this for oranges. Now, what we're doing is we're calculating the price elasticity demand for oranges. So we take the change in the two quantities, correct? So what's 400 minus 280? 120. So let's see. This is bananas here. It's oranges. So that's how we get this 120, right? And now what do we do? We take the summation of the two quantities, which is what? 680, right? We take the average of that, so 680 becomes what? 340, and what did I do wrong? Oh, again, that's bananas. It's 340. That's how we get to 340. Here. Now what do we do? Well, we take the difference between the two prices, which is 70. And this is not working, but... the difference between the two prices, let's see. It's 30, right? So that's how we get this 30. And then we take the two prices and divide by 2. Well, 40 plus 70 is what? 110 divided by 2 is 55, and that's how we get this 55. So again, we got two fractions. We invert, so 30 over 55 becomes 55 over 30, and then we multiply across. And now we got a value. Now, is this elastic or inelastic? I mean, the value is inelastic because the numerator is lower than the denominator, right? Or this has eyeballing this tells us that this number is less than 1. So this is inelastic. So we know that if we raise price, our total revenue is what? It's going to go now inelastic. Now think it through. If we raise price, our total revenue will go up, right? Because when we raise price, our consumers are very sensitive to that increase in price. No, so we'll sell less, but not a whole lot less. So the amount of money we gain by the higher price is greater than the amount of money we lose due to the decline in quantity. Well, I mean, everything has a elasticity of demand. You know, now gas prices would tend to be more inelastic, yes. I mean, every product either faces an elastic or inelastic demand curve. I mean, you know, assuming it's not unitary elastic, which could happen, but I mean, not very often. So, I mean, for all practical purposes, everything either faces an elastic or inelastic demand curve. Everything. So, you know what? So, like gasoline would be a good example of an inelastic. Why? Because gasoline is a necessity with few substitutes, right? I mean, you know, it's hard for us to burn peanut oil in our cars or water, you know. I mean, you know, our cars need, or even diesel. I mean, you know, our cars, unless you got a diesel, but I mean, you know, our cars need, the gas. I mean, there are few substitutes. We can all cut back on our driving, but how much? Well, there's a lot of people can't cut back a whole lot. A lot of the driving is a necessity. So gasoline would face an inelastic demand curve. But that does mean, you see, now if the price of gasoline goes up, will people buy less? Yeah, they'll buy less because we're talking about downward sloping demand curve. Yes, they'll buy less, but how much less? Well, in the case of gasoline, you know, not a whole lot less. Now, if we're looking at a product that is a luxury with maybe many substitutes, and we increase the price, elastic or inelastic? We're looking at something that is a luxury with many substitutes, or even if it's not a luxury, just something with a lot of substitutes, and we raise price. What's going to happen? People are going to substitute it for something else. So the quantity demand is going to go down a whole lot. And if it does, we're probably looking here at an elastic demand curve. See, if we're selling something, and it's especially if it's a luxury with many substitutes, well, that's going to be very sensitive to a change in price. We change the price just a little bit, we increase it just a little bit, it's going to have a big effect on how many units we sell. So there's a probability here that if we raise price, our total revenue is going to go down. And that's elastic. Our total revenue went down because the amount of money we lost due to the decline in sales was greater than the amount of money we gained through the higher price. See how that works? Okay, let's see. Again, all this was just a review, but that's really the heart and core of, again, you know, what I've been talking about here is price elasticity of demand, because what did we change to when we considered elasticity? We changed price. And we were looking at the demand curve. So this is why, well, you know, all we've done so far, this is why we call it a price elasticity of demand. Now, if we were looking at a supply curve, looking at that, well, then, you know, do we have supply elasticity demand? Or there are other types of elasticities that we'll talk about here shortly. So what is a linear demand curve? A straight line demand curve. Linear means a straight line. And here we have a straight line demand curve. And we've got price now is always on the vertical axis and quantity is always on the horizontal axis. That's one of these rules of the game in economics. Now, price is always on the vertical axis. See, here's price. And then quantity is always down here on the horizontal axis. So what we're measuring here is a change in price and a change in quantity. And the demand curve is downward sloping because, you know, we're assuming that all demand curves are downward sloping. In fact, we call that the law of demand, right? We say price goes up, people buy less. Price goes down, people buy more. Now, what this is showing us here is that if we calculated elasticity on this demand curve, you know, going now to calculate elasticity, keep in mind that, like if we're calculating price elasticity demand, price has to change, right? I mean, isn't that the whole point of what we're doing? I mean, we're saying, okay, if price changes, then what will be the result? What will be the result in terms of our total revenue? But see, to calculate elasticity, a change has to take place. So if you look at this linear demand curve here, well, what we're doing is that, you know, we got points A, a point A, point B, point C, D, and point E. And then we're calculating the price elasticity of demand like between A and B. And then we're going down and we're calculating the price elasticity of demand, you know, between points D and E. I mean, points A and B is on the upward portion of the demand curve, and points D and E is on the lower portion of the demand curve. Now, if we follow this formula that we just went through, you know, the percent change in quantity divided by the percent change in price, we do that just like we do with with oranges, we find that we come up with different values. You know, the price elasticity of between A and B is a different price elasticity that we would get it between prices D and E. And what we would find is that at higher prices, we find that our value would be more elastic, and at lower prices, when we calculate price elasticity demand, we would come up with an inelastic result. So higher prices, more elastic. Lower prices, more inelastic. Now, a good way to remember this, and again, you know, you don't want to commit this to memory because then you just get hopelessly confused. So, you know, the way I like now what we're talking about here is the price of a one particular product. But I'm going to use two different products just to make a point. And the two products I'm going to use, and the same two products I used in an example in an earlier lecture, is the price of cars and the price of salt, a box of salt. Now, how sensitive are you going to be to a 10% increase in price? Now, let's say the new car is $25,000, and let's say the box of salt is 40 cents. Now, both of them are going to increase in price by 10%. Now, is there going to be a difference in your behavior in terms of a consumer and considering buying these two things? Well, what's a 10% increase in price of 40 cents? 4 cents. So the price of the box of salt went up from 40 cents to 44 cents. Now, is that going to deter a lot of would-be consumers? I mean, are they going to say, man, oh man, look, this box of salt went up by a full 10%, and I'm just going to have to wait a while before I buy my next box of salt? I mean, Yeah, I mean, it would have to be a big increase, right, in order, you know, for it to make a difference. But 10% increase, I mean, most people wouldn't even know the difference, right? I mean, especially since a box of salt might last you, what, for 6 months? And we're talking about an increase in price of 4 cents? So most people wouldn't even really notice that. Now, if you're talking about a car that's priced at $25,000 and that goes up to 10%, well, what's 10% of $25,000? Well, now you're talking what, $2,500. Now, would $2,500 make a difference in someone's decision of, well, you know, should I buy this or not? Well, for some people will still buy at the higher price, but you're going to have more people say, hey, I can't afford that $2,500. And actually, if you're paying cash, it's $2,500, right? But if you're financing over 3 to 5 years and the price goes up 10%, well, you're actually talking about more than 10% because you're paying, I mean, if you had to borrow the money over 3 to 5 years, you're talking about maybe $5,000 instead of $2,500, right? So a 10% increase in price. See, we've got something here that its price is high relative to your income. Okay. Now, if you're some big shot CEO of a bank, you know, there was. In today's Wall Street, you know, they had an article about some bank executives, you know, that, you know, last year they made $25 million, $60 million in 1 year salary. Now, if you make that kind of salary, a 10% increase in the price of a $2,500 car is not going to make any difference at all, right? But, I mean, you know, what we're assuming here, you know, for most people, I mean, you know, the average income people, people that are, in debt and living from payday to payday, $2,500 is going to make a difference. Why? Because that $25,000, the price of that automobile is fairly large relative to the person's income. Now, if you take a box of salt, if you're talking about 44 cents, well, that's low in price relative, see, it's always relative to most people's incomes, right? So with a low price, something that's low relative to one's income, the more inelastic. The higher the price relative to one's income, then the more elastic. Now, isn't that just common sense? See, again, you got to look at this and just see, you know, here's that diagram again, and you got to look at this and see the reasoning behind it, see the logic behind it. You just think about it. Don't try to cram anything into your brain. Just think about it, and you say, oh yeah, well sure, that makes sense. So you see the logic in it. It just makes sense. Yeah.
This is kind of off topic, but I actually have to go right now, but I was just wondering if the test is still on Monday.
Yeah, the test will still be Monday. Yeah. Yeah, the deadline will still be Monday. Okay, so thanks for letting me know, by the way. Yeah. So now you see how this here makes a lot of sense? Okay, how do price and total revenue relate in the elastic range? Okay, well, this slide here just really explains what I just explained without, from the top of my head. But in the elastic range of a demand curve, price and total revenue move in opposite directions. In the inelastic range, price and total revenue move in the same direction. So that's precisely what this what this graph was showing us. High price and low price. See, I was using two different products here, but the same reasoning, you know, would apply to the same product. At higher prices, more elastic, because at higher prices, this one product, people are more sensitive to that change. Where at lower prices, if you look at the same product, people are less sensitive to a change in price. Now, what this shows us, I mean, see, if you look at this graph here, this downward sloping demand curve, and, you know, elastic at high prices, inelastic at lower prices, if you calculate total revenue, this is what you get. You get as total revenue increases, you know, starting from zero quantity, so as we raise price, total revenue increases. But at the lower, as we continue to raise price, total revenue begins to drop. Okay, now what is a perfectly elastic demand curve? Well, a perfectly elastic demand curve would be a horizontal line reflecting a situation in which any price increase reduces quantity demanded to zero. Now, that is possible. Now, it may not happen very often, but hypothetically, a perfectly elastic demand curve would look like this. This would say, okay, at this price, we're going to sell an infinite number. But if we raise price, we're not going to sell anything. See, that's infinitely elastic. Now here in the coming up soon, a big part of this semester is a topic called price output determination, and what we're going to do for about four chapters is that we're going to pretend that we own a business, and then we're going to find how we make decisions on what price to charge and what quantity to produce to maximize our profit. But we're going to learn that when we look at this, it's going to make a difference of what type market that we're in, because there are four type markets. There's perfect competition on one extreme, monopoly on the other extreme, and then we get monopolistic competition and oligopoly in between these two extremes. So there's four different type of markets. Well, now the first market that we're going to look at in this segment here that's called price output determination is perfect competition. Now, in perfect competition, we're going to learn that as a seller, as part of a perfectly competitive market, the demand curve that we face is perfectly elastic. Now, just think about this. The best example of a perfect a competitive type market would be most farmers. Let's say you're a farmer and you raise cabbage. You plant and harvest cabbages. So you're in the cabbage industry. Now, you take your cabbage to market, and the market price is, I don't know how much cabbage would sell for, but let's say, you know, it's $5 a bushel. And you say, you know, I worked hard to harvest these cabbages, and $5 a bushel just isn't enough for me, so I'm going to charge $5.25 a bushel. Well, how many bushels are you going to sell at $5.25? I mean, how many other cabbage farmers are there coming to market? There may be hundreds, even thousands. And their cabbage is just like your cabbage. You can't differentiate your cabbage from their cabbage. And they're all charging 5 cents a bushel. So if you come along and you say, well, I'm going to charge $5.25 a bushel, how many cabbages are you going to sell? Zero. I mean, who in their right mind would buy from you and pay $5.25 if they could buy exactly the same thing from hundreds of others for $5 a bushel. See what I mean? Therefore, you face a very you face a perfectly elastic demand curve, because if you are so small relative to the total market that when you bring your cabbage to market, as long as you sell at the market price, you're going to be able to sell everything you bring to market. If you bring one truckload, you sell one truckload. If you bring 10 truckloads, you sell 10 truckloads. Because no matter how many truckloads you bring to market, it's still a drop in a bucket compared to the total market. So if the market price is $5 a bushel, and you go to market and you sell your cabbage $25, you charge the market price, then you're going to sell all your cap. But if you charge anything higher than the market price, then you won't sell one unit. Now, what kind of demand curve is that? That's a perfectly elastic demand curve. So you see, perfectly elastic demand curves do exist. When we're looking at a perfectly competitive market and measuring price output determination, what price to charge, what quantity produced to maximize the profit or minimize the losses, then it's important for us to know that we face a perfectly elastic demand curve. Well, what is a perfectly inelastic demand curve? Well, a perfectly inelastic demand curve would say that if we raise price, it's not going to make any difference in terms of the quantity demanded. Now, this isn't going to exist very often in markets, but theoretically, what kind of situation would face a perfectly inelastic demand curve? Well, that would say that, maybe you've got someone that's terminally ill and their, price of medicine, goes up by 50%. And a person says, well, I was spending $100 for this medicine, but now it's $150. And, of course, if you don't get the medicine, you'll die. But they say, I'm just not going to pay that $50. I mean, it's not worth it to me. I mean, most people would say, hey, I'll pay up $50 because I'd rather live than die, right? In other words, there may be some cases where if we raise price, the quantity demanded is not going to change at all. See, now, and what would that look like? Well, that would look like this. It would be a perfectly vertical demand curve. See, this is a value of zero. Now, a perfectly elastic demand curve had a value of infinity. Infinity mean, hey, no matter how many you bring to market, you're going to sell all of them. So it's almost infinite. But here, the value is zero. This says, the change is zero. You raise price, the quantity demand doesn't change. It's zero. So a perfectly inelastic demand curve has a value of zero, and graphically it would be a perfectly vertical demand curve. See, price goes up. Well, the quantity stays the same. Doesn't make any difference. We got something here that's a very much of a necessity and has virtually no substitutes. I mean, it's absolutely a necessity, and it absolutely has no substitutes. Now, again, this is theoretical. I mean, you might not find too many. You're not going to find too many examples of either extreme. I mean, the farmer, like the vegetable farmer, would be, example of a perfectly elastic demand curve. But I mean, if you look at all goods and services, they're going to fall somewhere between these two extremes. They're either going to be somewhat elastic or somewhat inelastic. So a unitary elastic demand curve would have a value of -1. Now, it has a value of -1 because the negative sign connotates an inverse relationship between price and quantity. And since demand curves have a negative slope, the value would be a negative number. So we would say this is one. Well, what would a, you know, what this is saying is that, you know, we raise price and the amount of money we gain exactly equals the amount of money we lose. See, that's called unit elastic. And what would that look like graphically? Well, it would look like this. It would be a curve with a bow to it that is a gentle curve. You have to, you know, those who are listening to this tape, you really have to look at the PowerPoint slides to see what I'm talking about here. But this is slide 56. And what this shows us is that as we change price, our total revenue stays the same. Our total revenue stays the same because the amount of money we gain exactly equals the amount of money we lose. Now again, this is an extreme case. There may not be too many examples of this in, you know, out there in the market, but theoretically, it could exist. I mean, it does exist, just not very often. Okay, now what we're going to do, up to now we've been talking about price elasticity of demand. We change price, what's the result? Well, now we're going to look at different types of elasticities. Like, what is income elasticity of demand? Well, income elasticity of demand is a percentage change in the quantity demanded resulting from a 1% change in total income. The percentage change in the quantity demanded resulting from a 1% change in total income. Well, now you see, instead of changing price, what are we changing? We're changing income. And of course, which income are we changing? Real or money? Or nominal? Money, income, nominal income mean the same thing. Sometimes we use the word money, sometimes we use the word nominal. So if we change income, are we talking about nominal income or real income? We're always talking about real income in economics, because it's real income that ultimately that determines demand, right? It's one's buying power that determines demand. So what this is, so what we're doing here, we're saying, okay, if one's real income changes by a certain amount, what effect will that change in income have on the purchase of certain goods and services? And so we call that income elasticity of demand. Now mathematically, in terms of calculating income elasticity of demand, the formula is the same as price elasticity of demand, except instead of changing price, we're looking at a change in income. So it would be the change in the quantity demanded divided by the change, instead of price, would be divided by the change in income. And again, we would use the ARC formula rather than the mathematical formula. I mean, you know, arithmetic type formula to use in math. Now, we're not going to get into income elasticity demand in any great detail, but really the purpose here is just to show you that, you know, there are different types of elasticities depending upon what is changing. Is price changing and we're measuring the result of that, or is income changing and we're measuring the result of that? Well, there's also something called cross-elasticity of demand. Now, this is a third type of elasticity, but before we can talk about cross-elasticity demand, we got to go back and make sure we understand some terms. So what is a normal good? Well, I've talked about this earlier in an earlier chapter, and we learned that a normal good is a good that as incomes increase, what? By more or less? Where they're going to buy more. A normal good is something that one would buy more of as your income increases. But an inferior good, well, let's see. Let me follow these slides. this slide 59 says, if a good is normal, then the income elasticity of demand for that good is positive. Now, what does this mean? If a good is a normal good, an income of elasticity of demand for the good is positive. That means that if we raise incomes, then people are going to buy more of this good. See, they both go up. Incomes go up, and people buy more. So that's a positive relationship. One goes up, the other goes up. Now, what is an inferior good? Well, an inferior good is a good that people buy less of as their incomes increase. Now, say, what would be some examples of normal goods and inferior goods? Well, there are lots of examples. You know, I would say that maybe new cars would be a normal good. You know, if people's incomes go up, they might tend to buy more new cars. So that'd be a normal good. But if they buy more new cars, they'll probably buy fewer used cars. So used cars would be an inferior good. Or maybe as people's incomes goes up, they'll buy more steak. So that would be a normal good. But if they eat more steak, they may eat less hamburger. So hamburger would be an inferior good. See what I mean? The incomes go up, people buy less hamburger. Normal goods, inferior goods. Now if you're talking about income elasticity of demand for an inferior good, then the relationship is negative. You know, incomes go up and people buy less. See, that's a negative relationship. One goes up, the other goes down. Incomes go up, people buy less. So the relationship here would be negative if you're talking about inferior goods. Positive for normal goods, negative for inferior goods. Now we're looking at what is cross price elasticity of demand. And what this is the percent change in the demand of one good as a result of the percent change in the price of another good. Now when we're looking about cross elasticity demand, we're saying that these two goods that we're looking at are related. Now in what two ways can goods be related? Complementary goods or substitutes, right? Either they're related. I mean, now most goods are not related at all. But if they are related, then they can be related as either being substitutes or complementary goods. A substitute says, well, I can use this good or I can use that good. See, I can substitute this for that. A complementary good says, these two go together, and if I use more of this good, I'll tend to use more of this other good. See, they go together. Like steak and steak sauce are complementary goods. You know, you buy more steak, then you probably buy more steak sauce. Those are complementary goods. Or cars and gasoline are complementary goods. You know, if you drive more, then you're going to use more gas. So either goods can be substitutes or they can be complements. Now, what cross elasticity demand says is that if the price of one changes, now when we say one, we mean okay, we're looking at two goods here, and they're related. They're related as either being complements or substitutes. Now, if we change the price of one, what effect will that have on the other? See, with price elasticity demand, we were saying if we change the price, what happens with total revenue for that one good? Well, now what we're saying is that what's changing here is not the price of the good we're looking at, but there's a change in price of some related good. That good may be related as a substitute, or it may be related as a complementary good. But if that substitute over there, you see, changes in price, then that's going to affect, this first one over here. So we call that cross price elasticity of demand. See? Now, price is changing, but it's not, price is not changing of the good in question. Price is changing of some related good or service. And if negative, then we know that these are complements. In other words, if we calculate a cross price elasticity demand and we come up with a negative number, then we know that the two goods are related as complements. If we come up with a positive number, then we know that the two goods are related as being substitutes. And again, that if you think about it, that just makes sense. It's just common sense here. A lot of it's just common sense. There's a best-selling Principles of Economics textbook called Economics: The Science of Common Sense. Once you understand the vocabulary, and once you have a working knowledge of the principles, then the rest of it is just common sense. It's just logic. It's just common sense. That's why, what kind of students have a difficult time with economics? Those students who try to rely on their memory. Instead of thinking about it, instead of using your own common sense reasoning power, they just try to cram information into their brain. Well, it's not going to work. It's not going to work in economics. But economics is really quite simple if you just see the logic in it. It just makes sense once you see the logic. And once you understand, now logic alone isn't good, because you got to have a working knowledge of the vocabulary and you got to understand the basic principles. But once you understand the vocabulary and once you understand, have a working knowledge of the principles, then your reasoning power will get you to the right answer. Well, someone here needed to hear that. But it's not those over there in Dublin. I think I've lost. Anybody left over there in Dublin? Was my lecture that bad? Yeah, well. Okay. If an increase in the price of peanut butter causes a decline in the demand for jelly, then the goods are complements. See, if an increase in the price of peanut butter causes a decline in the demand for jelly, then they're complements. See? Now, again, this is just logic. The increase in price of one says what? Well, we're going to buy less of that. But if we buy less of that, then we can buy less of the complement, right? If we buy less steak, we'll buy less steak sauce. Those are complements. And if a decrease in the price of one good causes a decline in the demand for another, then the goods are substitutes. And again, that's just common sense. If there's a decrease in the price of one, and that causes a decline in the demand for the other, that means that those had to be substitutes. Because if the price went down for one, you said, oh, I'm going to buy more of this. But if you buy more of this, you're going to buy less of the substitute. See? That's just common sense. Now, what are some examples of complementary goods? Well, computers and software, cars and gasoline. Oh, I got CDs. So I guess CDs are still. Oh, CDs and playlists. Well, that's. I think I did update this. I guess some people still use CDs, right? Buy music with CDs. I've gotten away from that entirely. I download everything, which I think is the way most people are going. And make up your own playlist, like in iTunes. But anyway, What is price elasticity of supply? Okay, now we're going to look at elasticity in terms of supply. But we're not going to get into it in great detail because it's really the same as demand. We're just talking about supply instead of demand. But so what is price elasticity of supply? A measure of the responsiveness of a quantity supplied to a price change. So if price changes, what effect is that going to have on the quantity supplied? Is it going to have a big effect or a little effect? Again, you know, elasticity, when you hear the word elasticity, you always have to think responsiveness. You know, how, you know, okay, there's a change taking place. Is there going to be a big response to that, or is there going to be a little response to that? See, that's what elasticity is all about. It's not the absolute, but it's the extent of the response. Is it going to be a big response or a little response? Now, we know which way the response is going to be. Like, since demand curves have a negative slope, we know that if price goes up, the quantity demand goes down. But how much? How much? You see, responsiveness. How responsive how sensitive are people to a change in price or a change in these other things? In this case, it would be supply. If price changes, how sensitive are suppliers going to be to that change in price? Now, if you're talking about markets, you see, what's going to cause a change in price? The market. See, we're not talking about suppliers changing price here. We're talking about, you know, the market is changing the price. Because ultimately, the market determines the price. Because what we're doing here is that we are looking at how free markets work. Now, most markets are free, but not all markets are free. And as a political system becomes more, where power becomes more centralized, then, you know, fewer and fewer markets are free. But no matter what, I mean, to understand what's happening, you gotta know how free markets work, and that's what we're studying here. We're looking at the free market. How does a free market operate? And then later on, we'll look at, well, what happens if markets aren't so free? What will be the result? And here is the formula for the price elasticity equals the percent in quantity demanded divided by the percent change in price using the ARC formula. And I think there's a mistake here. I think should have been supply. The price elasticity of the quantity supply divided by the percent change in price. So I do think this is a mistake. I think it's the case if I just copied the slide but forgot to amend it. What is a perfectly elastic supply curve? That's slide 68, and I'll try to fix that. What is a perfectly elastic supply curve? A horizontal line reflecting a situation in which any price decrease reduces the quantity supply to zero. The elasticity value is infinity, and this would be an example of a perfectly elastic supply curve. And what is a perfectly inelastic supply curve? Well, this would be a vertical line, and it would look like this. So really, it's the same as, you know, with demand, but we're talking about supply. So everything is the same, except we're talking about supply here instead of demand. What is a unit elastic supply? Well, again, that would be the same as demand, right? That would mean that a price change would be neutral. The amount of money lost would equal the amount of money gained. Now a unit elastic supply curve would look like this. So it's a straight line at 45 degrees coming out from the origin, you know, origin where demand curve hits your supply curve at zero, and then we got this straight line, 45 degree line, and this would be an example of a unit elastic supply curve. Again, you know, it may not exist very often, but it is a possibility. Now, what are the determinants of supply elasticity? Well, costs and time. See, one thing that suppliers are very sensitive to is a change in cost. Change in what cost? Well, change in resource costs. You know, labor, raw materials, things like that. But, you know, whatever, taxes, change in costs. And time is a factor in suppliers are sensitive to time. You know, why do people pay more money to fly a plane to California as opposed to a bus? It's faster. See, time is a factor here. And what this shows us is that, see, as time, you know, we've got three supply curves here, and one is labeled W, one is M, and one is Y. And if we go from W, which is week, M is month, and Y is year, as we go from week to month to year, the supply curve becomes more horizontal. Because why? Well, because people have, the longer the time period, the more opportunities people have to adjust to this change that's taken place. See, maybe in a very short time a change takes place, and people, well, they don't have time to adjust, so it's not going to make a whole lot of difference. But given more time, you know, for people to evaluate what's happened and evaluate their options, then, you know, they're able to make more changes. Now, what effects of different demand elasticity and sales tax instance? Well, now this is an example of how we use this information. And with this, for example, here is a demand curve for, I guess we're talking about cigarettes here. And here's the supply curve for cigarettes. And we're saying that we're going to increase the tax on a pack of cigarettes by 40 cents. Now, if we increase taxes on cigarettes, what's happening to costs? Well, I mean, if you're the supplier of cigarettes, and your tax for every pack that you produce goes up, your costs go up, right? That tax is a cost to you. Well, if costs go up, what happens to the supply curve? It shifts to the left, right? I mean, if you own this business and your costs went up, you couldn't afford to supply as much as you did at every price level as you did before. You know, your ability has gone down. So supply curve shifts to the right. Well, see, this is a picture. Okay, here we have a demand curve. Here we have a supply curve. Supply shifts to the left. What effect does this have on the supplier? In other words, what this is showing us is that the supplier is going to pay 30 cents of that 40 cents, and the consumer is going to pay 10% of that 40 cents. See, in other words, let's say you own a business and your costs increase. Now, how much of that increase in costs are you going to have to absorb yourself, and how much of that increase in cost are you going to be able to pass off onto the consumer via higher prices? Well, the answer to that depends on the price elasticity of demand for the demand and supply, right? I mean, how much you have to pay yourself and how much you can pass on to the consumer depends on elasticity of demand and supply. So what this is showing us here is who has to pay what. Now, if you compare this graph, here we got a downward sloping demand curve and a supply curve. See, what's the difference between these two graphs? Here's the first graph. Here's the second graph. See what's happening here? Well, the supply curves are the same, but what's changing? Well, the demand curve is changing. The demand curve in the second graph is becoming more elastic or more horizontal. Now, what this says is that if this business is given a 40%, an increase in taxes, then the amount of money they have to pay of that 40 cents and the amount of money that the consumer has to pay is now the opposite. And this, see, I'm trying to get done here. Effects of different supply elasticities on sales tax incidence. So this is the same, this is important. I mean, if we raise taxes on business, can we assume that they will pay that increase in taxes? Well, no. I mean, ultimately, I mean, in almost every case, they will have to pay a part of it, and the consumer will have to pay a part of it. But the question now is, if a business is given a tax increase, how much will they have to pay, and how much will the consumer have to pay? And the answer to that question depends on the elasticities, the price elasticities of demand and supply for the product in question. And that's, you know, one reason why we study elasticities. Let's see. Well, this is the end, and it is. I got 10 seconds. How about that? So I did finish this chapter. So what are y'all going to do for next time? Come on now. This is chapter 5, right? So you're going to read chapter 6, right? So read chapter 6 before next time, and I'll see you all next time.